thanks for still being here. We're super excited about being here, and we told Daisy that she didn't have to do this part because kind of the key piece of our real takeaway of our talk is why we're both standing up here, which is that this is a collaborative relationship between two organizations focused on the key issues around employment and a cancer diagnosis and the law. And so we stand here kind of in representation of that. So my name is Rebecca Nellis, and I am the Vice President of Programs and Strategy for an organization called Cancer and Careers.
And I'm Monica Bryant. I'm a cancer rights attorney and the Chief Operating Officer for an organization called Triage Cancer.
And we don't have anything to disclose. And Cancer and Careers is a national nonprofit that has been around for nearly 13 years, and we were founded and we are solely focused on the issues around employment and cancer and the really practical ones that come up with the diagnosis. So at any point on the work continuum and at any point on the cancer continuum where those two things intersect, we are trying to and hope to be there to support patients, and we do that in a number of ways, both direct to patient services, but also services for healthcare professionals to help them work better with their patients and discover the triggers that are around work and a cancer diagnosis, because as everyone in this room knows, a diagnosis brings up questions of mortality, but it also brings up really big questions around identity, and employment is closely connected to those identity questions, since we don't ask people what is your favorite book when you first meet someone? We ask in this country, what do you do? And that rocks a person's core sense of self in the midst of this already large crisis.
And Triage Cancer is also a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing quality information and resources on all types of survivorship issues. And we do that in a couple of different ways. So we host a speakers bureau of experts that sort of run the gamut. Myself and my co-founder are both attorneys, and we talk about the legal and the financial issues, but we have experts on nutrition and exercise and sexuality and intimacy and all types of other things. So organizations can contact us, and we will put them in touch with experts if they're putting on some sort of educational event. We also have a blog that's available to anybody that talks about all types of different issues and other online materials. So we start off talking a little bit about the research behind why these topics are important, because we are research focused in this country. And in 2007, the Institute of Medicine put out a report called From Cancer Patient to Cancer Survivor, Lost in Transition. And this report was really about what do we as healthcare providers need to provide to our patients to help them transition from patient to survivor. And some of the things that they highlighted included the psychosocial and vocational needs of survivors. And then in 2008, same Institute of Medicine put out another study talking about the cancer care for the whole patient. And this was really where they highlighted the idea that we need to be talking about psychological and social, otherwise known as psychosocial problems, created or exacerbated by cancer and the treatment. So it's not just about the medical treatment and treating the physical person, but it's really about treating the entire person. And specifically, they address disruptions in work, school, and family life. And then finally, Livestrong did a study first in 2006, and then they did a follow-up in 2010, where they talked to cancer survivors about the different types of issues that they needed help with. And 98% of survivors talked about not only the physical and emotional issues, but the practical issues that they were dealing with. And sadly, only 20% of the people that said that they had problems got help with those problems. So that's an incredibly low number of patients that are getting assistance with these practical issues that they're dealing with. And perhaps even more sad about this number is that we saw a decrease in that number from 2006 to 2010. So we're actually seeing a backward slide in what kinds of help people are getting with these practical issues.
And then to sort of narrow in a little bit more on the research that's out there, and it is pretty limited on this topic around work specifically in cancer, There was a Journal of the American Medical Association article that found cancer survivors were more likely to be unemployed, and that 20% of cancer survivors still report work limitations affected by cancer-related problems 5 years after diagnosis. So for cancer and careers, that's a really important number because it is starting to extend the conversation around how long someone is actually dealing with a cancer-related problem in their workplace. And so I think we spent the first handful of years that we were in existence, and I've been with the organization for 10 years, thinking about it in the immediacy and in the I just got diagnosed and I'd either like to work or I think I'll like to go back to work. And now it's really how long are those treatments impacting the ability to work in an ongoing way after someone has told you that you're in remission and this is no longer your reality anymore, but we're seeing that patients are having problems long after that. And in addition, we did a small public interest survey last year with Harris Interactive just to try to get a little bit more at this topic. And 79% of the people who were surveyed for that little project who worked through their treatment said that work helped their recovery. So yes, we need to pick apart that data point and figure out what that really means to them. But even on a very basic psychological level, going to work seems to play a role in recovery. And so what does that look like and how can we contribute to that? And then as part of a program that Cancer and Careers does called the Educational Series for Healthcare Professionals, we do a pre-survey just to sort of gauge where our audience is. And we've been running this program for 5 years. So this data represents a little bit more than 2,000 respondents sort of letting us know what they're experiencing in their own practice. So I certainly won't go through each of them, but as you can see, the percentages are very high around patients complaining around chemo brain and its impact on being able to focus at work, that not all of the healthcare professionals we're in contact with are even familiar with the couple of laws that do exist nationally in this country that are designed to help cancer survivors, if they fit what the law requires, work through treatment, and that fully 80% of our population that were surveyed, their patients are asking for guidance on how to work through treatment. So this is a group that isn't equipped enough to answer those questions, but they're the ones getting the questions the most, which is what drove us creating two kinds of programming, one for patients and one for healthcare professionals.
So we hope we've made the case that addressing these work-related and practical issues is something that the healthcare team needs to be prepared to do. And when we're talking about clinical legal assessments, and we use the term legal because it's not just about the legal. Some of it is very practical. How am I going to get to work? How do I speak to my boss about these laws and these benefits that I'm entitled to? So why conduct them at all? And first thing is, people don't know what they don't know. Why would somebody in the general population know the ins and outs of the Americans with Disabilities Act or the Family Medical Leave Act? Typically, these are things that you don't need to know about until you need to know about them. And so talking with your patients is maybe going to bring up some other issues. Because patients are unlikely to prompt the conversation and to ask about these things. Because again, if you don't know about the ADA, why would you be asking about it? So oftentimes people are unaware and overwhelmed. They've just been told they have a cancer diagnosis. Why are they thinking about work? And then also in this country, talking about finances and work are very personal things. And it's not necessarily things that people associate with their healthcare team. So it's important to now talk about sort of open-ended questions, asking things about what type of work do you do? Do you have concerns about working through treatment or taking time off? And I think that you'll find that the responses are going to vary. It's not always about keeping a health insurance diagnosis or the financial impact about working through treatment, but as Rebecca mentioned, sometimes it's about keeping that identity, or work is that one place where you still have control over what's going on in your life. So asking these open-ended questions will give you, as healthcare providers, a much wider view of what your patient is going through and what their motivations are and enable you to help them a little bit.
So in our last handful of minutes, a handful is probably an extreme term for the amount of time that we have left. We just wanted to give you a little bit of a sense of how we take this topic and deliver it differently to different audiences and what are some of those key areas. And so not unlike a patient's treatment protocol, which is going to be individual and specific to the patient in question, their decision around work and how work fits into this process is entirely individual and is really about asking the patient a whole series of questions that they can then often with competing answers, come up with what seems like the best first step and then the best second step, and not unlike treatment, there are course corrections depending upon how things work out. And so we loosely break down this topic into three areas. The newly diagnosed area, although I will say a lot of the questions that come up in this space are applicable to people throughout their cancer experience, and even if someone didn't have this conversation when they were first diagnosed, it's never too late to start trying to fill in these puzzle pieces in that way, since this is so much about helping to regain that sense of control. So in this area, we talk about things like whether to work and what to think about if they're trying to make a decision about work, and that includes what kind of company do they work for, what's the culture there, has anyone else been through something similar that would be a mirror for what their experience might be like. Who do they need to talk to and where do they need to information gather? So it's from their workplace, it's from their healthcare team, it's from a legal perspective. The conversation about identity and self-worth is really important in this part of the conversation in that decision, and how they're feeling about having that threatened. And if it's not realistic for them to work, having worked through that, that's a huge thing for them, then figuring out how to help them through the part where they have to let that go. But often that skipped right over. And so there's a lot of work there that could be done, and we're trying to make sure as part of the conversation. An understanding of the Americans with Disabilities Act and how that may be beneficial to a patient in different phases of the employment process. And then a big area that's kind of new is the whole online space. How are people talking about their cancer online? Did they think that through beforehand? What kind of repercussions professionally could that have if they're exposing all of their health information to a universe that can Google it? And so that's a really big topic, not just in the young adult cancer community, but across that whole the whole population of working age people.
And then sort of the second bucket that we talk about is the working through treatment. So if you're thinking about working through treatment, what do you decide to tell at work, and who do you decide to tell? So many people think they have to disclose their cancer diagnosis, and legally, absolutely, you do not have to disclose anything. So talking about the ADA, reasonable accommodations, what types of things can occur in your job to help make you make it so that you can do your job. And then if you have to take some time off for treatment or recovery, what laws like the FMLA are available to you in order to do that?
And then in the final bucket, we talk a lot about returning to work. So that's both for people who just took a little bit of time out and are going back to the same job but have to figure out how to reassimilate and reacclimate and recast themselves, not as necessarily the person with cancer, but the person who they'd like to be at work and what that identity question looks like. But also the job search process, which is an area of huge stress and emotional heightened emotions for survivors, which is everyone's going to know I had cancer when I sit across from them in an interview. They're never going to want to hire me because of that, and I have a gap on my resume, and I have no idea how to explain it. And so we spend a lot of time working with patients around what are the strategies around that, and how do you clamp down on those emotions and also get strategic about how you would answer those kinds of questions. And then, of course, what of the laws that exist, how do they apply to that return to work or getting a new job space, and how they might be able to move forward with that. And then because we are out of time and also out of slides, we just have a couple of final ones for you.
So we've given you a lot of information, obviously, in the incredibly short period of time that we have, but we didn't want to just leave you with here's what we do, but rather that there are some resources to take back to your institutions and their colleagues that you work with. Cancer and Careers has Ask the Expert phone calls, which are we participate in. There's job coaches that participate in them, and it's a really great opportunity to basically ask any questions that you might have or your patients might have. And then specifically for healthcare professionals, there's a whole educational series done via webinar. There's a national work on there's a national conference on work and cancer every year in New York, and then some other events. And you can find all of this information on both of our websites. I mentioned Triage Cancer's blog, but specifically, we have a partnership where we provide in-service trainings for healthcare professionals, and we've done almost 7 to 10. I don't actually know the exact number.
We've done 7.
7 all over the country. And these are either day-long or half-day events where it's a very intimate setting, usually less than 30 people, and it's a intensive sort of training on all of the issues that come up that we've talked about. So if you're interested in having one of these events at your organization, you can contact either organization and we can see what we can set up.
And just a final note on that, while I've put up just a handful of other resources that might be useful, we have done it in individual hospital settings like just for Johns Hopkins or Northwestern, but also we've done group work where someone hosted and everyone in the area who was a healthcare professional dealing with patients in this way come in. So it's become a really important area for us, is getting that training going, and that is how you can reach us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Excellent.